Hello and welcome to Scoppy Radio. My name is Daniel Johansson.
And I'm Maureen Smith.
And we are joined today for Questionable Internet Opinions with Joshua Lewis Smith.
Hello.
And Emily Cox.
Hello.
Yeah, we've been excited about the idea of potentially having guests on for questionable internet opinions.
I have lots of questionable opinions.
Yeah.
All sorts of topics.
Yeah.
This is great.
Well, the event that you hosted that we had you on for just happened last night, too.
Yes.
And so afterwards, we like pulled you over in like drunkenness and we were like, come on the show tomorrow. Like, we want to talk to you about all of this because it was a really great event.
It was very, very good. I was so pleased with it. So last night was the event, Do You Hear the People Sing?
Yeah.
And it was a fundraiser for the ACLU and Refugee One. Mm-hmm. And we had horrible weather, awful weather. Mm-hmm. So we were slated for about 88 people to come. We got about 45 to 50,
okay,
which was awesome.
Yeah.
And people came and left throughout the entire event, which was great. That's exactly what they were supposed to do.
Yeah.
So amazingly enough, the Underground Wonder Bar decided they were going to just give us the door proceeds. So that was phenomenal.
Yeah, so we got a
$10 donation at the door. 100% of that goes straight to us. We're getting a cut of the liquor sales for the night, which is also incredible.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
Which, like,
so generous.
Which we did our part.
Everybody was very
generous.
We all
did our part.
In sponsoring activism through vodka, which is my favorite type of activism.
Mm-hmm. Vodka activism.
Well, my mother refused to drink vodka. That. She was drinking gin because she felt that the Russians didn't need anything else. So
they're like house vodka was Stoli, and I was like, je refuse.
I was drinking bourbon like a good American.
Yeah.
I was so nervous. I had Blue Moon beer on draft, and then I was like, I can't even. Like, I didn't eat all day. I was so nervous about this going well. And it went really well. Oh, my gosh. The ACLU speaker was amazing.
He was so good.
He was amazing.
Phenomenal. He was phenomenal. He came out and he was like, I live right around the corner. I couldn't wait to get here. I was super excited. I came right after work. He stepped up and he was so impassioned.
Oh, God.
And was so delighted that everybody was there.
And the audience was so there for him.
Yes. I know. Well, my family was in the audience.
Yeah.
Your family. So throughout the night, there would just be like passionate outbursts, and inevitably you would turn and it would be
my mother.
It would be your mother's
mom, which was the best.
So let you know that trait of not being able to shut up, that is an inherited trait. That's genetic. It's not my fault.
Yeah.
I literally have to sit on my hands at time to shut up because I use my hands when I talk.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So if I sit on my hands, I'm more likely to be quiet. But the event went really, really well. Everybody was very well received.
Yeah.
The skits went well. The piano was phenomenal. Chungers Kim rocked that piano last night.
Mm-hmm.
Rocked that piano last night.
Yeah.
And I was having fun. Like,
oh, yeah. I
just
think we
sitting
all were.
There watching my coworkers get up and sing and be fabulous. I was so proud of everybody.
Yeah.
I was so proud of everybody. And I was like, that's my friend. And somebody else would get up and I'm like, that's my friend too.
Yeah.
So, to me, it was really successful and it did exactly what we wanted it to do. It informed,
mm-hmm.
it educated,
yeah.
it inspired, and it got people. It lit a fire under people's asses to want to get out there and to continue to fight.
Absolutely.
It's March. It's almost April.
Yeah.
Well, and I loved that at the end of it, you were just kind of like, you know, this is not, you know, our show is over, but no, that's not the end of activism. Like,
no.
Go out. And I like that you, like, threw out some names of people to donate to and organizations to support. Like,
yes.
I think that was really, like, you shouted out CACTA,
yes,
which they're doing awesome work, and you know, a bunch of other really amazing organizations.
They want to join with Artists in Activism. They want us to get together with them and to go into their conglomerate with them.
Lee
so
mentioned
that we
that.
Can do more, because they said they don't have a lot of opera singers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
no.
They're always looking to expand, and I was like, that's great. We are looking for an outlet, and if this is the best outlet we have, then let's take over Chicago with a bunch of impassioned actors.
Like
when we
talked to Lee, he was like, and Emma Cox, like, I want to talk to her. I want to talk to her.
Yeah.
And we were like,
I went to their performance of Iolanthe, and I, like, as he came out of the dressing room, I, like, practically attacked him.
Good.
I was so excited.
Good.
So good things are happening. And I learned about him through the podcast that you guys have.
Yeah, no, we're killing it.
Oh, shit. So, saying,
I'm learning all sorts of things about Chicago and Milwaukee and the scene through your podcast.
Well, I want to talk more about activism, but before we do that, talking about our podcast, we have to do some housekeeping.
Yes.
So
first of all, as promised, if you are a monthly subscriber, you get a shout out. And we just got a new one, and it is my mom. Mm-hmm. So thank you from the bottom of my heart, Mom, for supporting this endeavor. This is, and I was talking to her on the phone, you know, as soon as we got, like, the notification, I called her and was like, thank you so much. I was just explaining to her, like, this is the most artistically fulfilled I've felt in a really long time.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like, you know, there have been projects that I've, like, short-term projects that I've done that have been really rewarding, but then they stop. And I feel like this, it has legs. And I feel like this is going to carry on for a long time. And it's only going to get more rewarding, honestly, as we grow. So, yeah, I'm just so appreciative of...
Did we thank my mom yet?
Yeah.
Okay.
I made you thank her.
Okay.
Yeah.
Was there anyone else that we were supposed to thank too? Or?
No.
Okay. Yes.
We're good.
Double thank you. Aileen Smith, shout out.
Yes.
You're the best.
And
thank
then,
you so much.
We also got a listener email.
We did get a listener email.
It is from Nat Peckham, who we had on for CVAC, the Chicago Vocal Arts Consortium.
Shout out to CVAC.
Shout out to CVAC.
They are rocking it.
They are.
I love those meetings.
I have not been able to go to a meeting yet because of my oddly prohibitive but very irregular work schedule. So one of these days, though, I'm going to go. So Matt wrote in. The subject was wasp mail, which I appreciated. The email said, hey, I just listened to your conversation about the shared/differing experiences of cis and trans women, and I wanted to let you know that Angela, his girlfriend, and I had just been tossing around that topic this week. I guess it's in the air right now. Thank you for taking the time to delve into it.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I loved your interview with Jesse Oliver. I realize I knew basically nothing about plus size intersectionality up to that point.
I learned
a lot today. More, please, Matt. So, Matt, thank you so much for, you know, your thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
It warmed my heart to get that email. I love that Jesse Oliver conversation.
I listened to that too.
And was like, I don't know where you are, Jesse Oliver, but we should be really good friends.
That's exactly how I felt. I was like, can I be your best friend?
Yeah. Funny, and we should hang out.
And she's fucking brilliant.
I'll bring wine.
And so
she's coming to my birthday.
Is she really?
She's coming to my birthday, yeah. Good. So podcast audience, my birthday is April 10th. If you want to donate before then, you should. It'll be a birthday present for me. Happy birthday, Maureen. Here's $5 a month.
You definitely should.
Yeah.
Well, and also about that email, what I loved, well, the trans issue is really important issue, and I think that's something that I've said on the show a couple times now, and we've said it on the show, is that it's really the front line right now.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
In a major way. Like, they're the most vulnerable. They're the most easy to be kind of, like, shit on by a lot of people. And so what was great and really refreshing was, like, sure, last night, I mean, it was, like, cis people mostly, but we, like, a lot, that was what the ACLU speakers talked about.
Yeah.
It was, like, how important it is to reach out to these marginalized groups and, like, especially the trans community, because it is just, you know, like,
they're under fire.
Yeah, absolutely.
I thought that was really inspiring, cool. too, that he was like, what we're seeing for the first time in my 30 years of working for the ACLU, because he'd worked with them for 30 some odd years, and he's like, what we're seeing for the first time is that people are sticking up for LGBTQ, trans, whatever, rights, even if they're not. Even if they're, you know, straight white lace from Iowa, they're still sticking up for people. People who are, like, you know, deep Southern Baptist evangelicals are sticking up for people who are Muslim. And he's like, we've never seen that before, where people are defending people who are completely different than them.
Yeah.
I just thought that I was like, yeah.
I mean, and I guess it's one of these things of, like, of course I'm horrified by the actions of this administration. But, you know, as with every tragedy, you do have something positive, and that is the overwhelming show of support that mm-hmm. you get from unexpected places. You know, and it's, I think it's really important that we identify the beauty that comes from something like this. Like when my dad was diagnosed with cancer, of course it was horrible, but the show of love that my family received, it was unlike anything I had ever experienced in my entire life. And so while like my world was rocked and like everything had just been turned upside down, at the same time, I had never felt more loved and more supported. And I think that the country and these marginalized populations are experiencing something similar. Mm-hmm. Their world has been rocked. They feel unsafe. But at the same time, there's just this overwhelming show of support from sources they would never have expected. Mm-hmm. So
also like kind of tangentially related, but like fucking Trump care not being passed. I've said this yesterday that like if we get universal health care in spite of Donald Trump, I will like that will be the most American thing that's ever happened. Like so fucking good.
I will tell you, here's a shout out to every Republican representative who stood against party and stood up to Trump despite him threatening them directly that he would politically and in any other way that he possibly could come after them.
Yeah.
He publicly said, if you stand against me, I'm going to come after you.
Well, I would love to have people write in on this because there's a few things I said that was a little disconcerting to that end. And maybe also and helpful is that there were actually also Republicans that didn't sign on to the bill because it didn't go far enough.
Yes.
Mm. That there were people that felt the bill was not conservative enough. And so a lot of the add-ons to the bill towards the end were trying to assuage those people. And that's when it just got completely ridiculously messy. And so I've heard that. I've also heard that the tricky part about the bill was because Obama basically went to Republican-led Congress and was like, give me your ideas for a workable healthcare bill before he made the ACA.
Yeah.
He basically just cultivated all of the Republican Party's best ideas, and that's what he made the ACA, because if Obama was able to free reign make a bill, he probably would have made something much more similar to universal healthcare. And so ACA was entirely like a an olive branch, like absolutely. A reaching out kind of a thing.
It was a bipartisan effort.
Exactly. And so you can't beat your best ideas, basically.
Yep.
Which is kind of like a weird, brilliant Obama move. I mean, I'm sure there are tons of things that you could critique Obama on, but like but that was just one of those like Harvard Law, brilliant, like, publishing shit in journals
kind of thing. If you know you're going to have a shit time passing a bill, first thing you're going to do is go to the opposition and be like, what will make you happy?
Yeah.
And vote on with this.
Right. Like, yeah, exactly.
Well, and that's just something that we're not seeing with this administration, mm-hmm. is like, there's no...
Because they don't care.
Exactly. Yeah. I know. And it's
their way or the highway.
Right.
And there's so many people on the right that don't even know that ACA and Obamacare are the same thing. And I know we've talked about that too, but like,
I had a moment where I have a very good girlfriend, and her husband is my Facebook friend, and I adore this guy. So I am going to take the high road and say he was drunk when he wrote this, because I can't believe that he would really do this. But he wrote a Facebook post, and he was like, "Oh, they didn't pass the Trump care. Don't gloat, because here's all these awesome things that they slipped into the bill last minute, and all of these are no longer going to be available to you." And I was like, "Pause. First of all, I don't trust anybody slipping anything into a bill last minute. Do you mm-hmm. know how big those bills are? That means last minute, you got to go in 20 minutes beforehand and read all this shit. No, don't slip anything into a bill, because I'm not voting for it because I didn't read it.
Yeah.
Second of all, if all these things were so great, why didn't they introduce them in the first place?
Right.
And third of all, yeah, I am going to gloat. I am going to gloat that a bunch of out-of-touch, white, rich guys didn't get their way to screw the rest of Americans. I am going to gloat that I am going to gloat that they did not vote against the best interests of their constituents, and that the constituents turned around and called and made jolly hell in their offices for days and nailed them to the wall and made them feel like they would not have their job anymore. Mm-hmm. I am going to gloat about that. That's democracy in action. And then I put a bunch of happy faces at the end of the because I realize I have to see them at Thanksgiving and I really love them.
Right. Now, that's actually a fantastic segue to something that we're going to talk about, and we'll probably circle around to this topic two or three times in this podcast today, but emotional manipulation we were going to talk about. And the reason that that makes that me think of that is there's a lot of like emotional manipulation and gaslighting to try to make liberals feel like we're being unreasonable. Specifically targeted, where people would be like, well, yeah, but you know, just let everyone talk and let, oh, but you know, just hear them out when they're saying gays should be die in a furnace. And it's gaslighting, and you're like, I am being unreasonable. They should speak as much as I should speak, and we all should get along, but they don't want to get along with us. So then, and that's, but I think that's nothing new that's happening. It's nothing.
No, it is very new. But the term that's been happening to
Democrats forever,
and
right?
Liberal tears. That's my favorite. That's why I made that whole joke. We had a whole skit for Everybody Didn't Come Last Night where Ivanka Trump kept coming on trying to sell shit. Like, sitting in on the meetings. And one of the things she was going to sell was liberal tears mascara.
Yeah.
Because I am so sick of people talking about liberal tears. I'm like, what does that even mean?
It means that, it's not it means it's that like
I'm
we're
too
crying.
Sensitive?
Yeah, we're crying because we don't get rights because you don't want to acknowledge us as human beings. Oh, we're so sensitive.
How dare I be so sensitive to the plight of those who are marginalized? What was I thinking?
Have you seen the Snowflakes Killed the Nazis meme?
No.
Because it's amazing. Since 45 got elected, I've just like joined a bunch of weird meme, dank meme for democratic socialist groups, because that's where that's where I am politically, I guess. I don't know. They're funny though, is the thing. That's one of them, is the idea when someone brings up like on Twitter or something like oh, you're being a liberal snowflake, to just like post a picture of the Nazis in Russia and go like, the snowflakes killed the Nazis.
Snowflakes killed the Nazis.
Yeah.
Well, okay, Jesus. On the gaslighting issue.
Yes, I am
totally with you with that. I don't know if we talked about this before, but I had in the course of this getting ready for this event. Yes, I'm so sorry. I'm running off very little sleep.
No, you're fine.
Building up momentum for the event, I was vomiting all over Facebook to make it very public. So I apologize if everybody was like, Jesus, Emma, we know it's happening. Shut up. One of which was a coworker that definitely will not listen to this podcast. And she met up with a bunch of us for drinks one night after work, which I don't know if anybody's worked in the service industry, but the after shift drink is like a religious sacred experience. You don't fuck with the after shift drink. You've all just put up with shit.
Right.
So you go and you won't bond over bitching about other people. And in the middle of us talking about, you know, oh, we're so sad, she turns to me and I'm in a booth. I'm cornered in a booth. It was a round half booth. I've got six people on one side. Not six. There was like four. And like, her on the end, so I can't get out unless I crawl under the table. And she turns to me and she's like, I want to talk to you about this whole event that you're having and how you're anti-Trump, because I think that you're wrong, and let me tell you why. And she proceeds to tell me that I love it. She is Jewish, and she told me that Trump is pro-Israel and that nobody else is looking out for Israel, and that was her whole basis of that. And I looked at her and I went, I sat there for, no shit, an hour, because I had to pee, so I was, like, literally, like, twiddling my thumbs to get the hell out of the booth, because I was like, I'm gonna pee in this booth. But I sat there, and I let her go on and on and on and on, and I finally had to stick my hand physically in my face, on my nose, and push her out of my face and be like, now you're done speaking, because you're not making any sense. And if you really think about this, you know you're not making any sense. You know deep down that you're wrong. You only have this one issue that you feel very powerfully about. One issue, okay? One issue does not trump 90 other issues. And if you think that that's what it is, then you're crazy. And I feel like the people who are those really, really strong conservatives that are still defending the Trump administration, it's because of that. They pick one issue, they dig their teeth into it, and it's like they stick their fingers in their ears and go,
yeah,
for the rest of everything else. They don't want to hear it. They know it's wrong. They want to deny reality.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And even if they take one aspect of one issue, because if you even delved into the entire like Israel-Palestine, which I do not want to do, because I don't want to like be the uninformed person that's doing that. But like it quickly kind of doesn't make, never mind.
It doesn't make any sense. Yeah. I looked at her and I was like, honey, if you think he gives a shit about any of us, we do not make enough in our tax bracket for him to care about
us. And if you think that he cares about Jews when he has Steve Bannon?
Yeah. On Breitbart.
Yeah. Breitbart? You can go fuck yourself, you delusional fuck.
Yeah.
What do you care about Jews?
I need you to move so I can pee. I need you to move. But that to me was really like shocking because she's very kind to me and she continues to be kind to me. I gave her a hug at the end of the night, whatever.
Yeah.
But I got in the car and I was like, what just happened? Mm-hmm. I want that hour of my life back.
Yeah.
Like, I sat there with my mouth open and I'm like, I don't even know what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think you know what you're talking about.
Right.
Because definitely nobody, our waiter came over 4 times and was like, I don't know what the fuck's going on.
Oh my God.
Well, I know the when I thought of emotional manipulation, the thing I've been thinking about kind of related to this is like workplace environment things.
Yes.
And for me, it's shitty bosses. Oh. And that's kind of like especially like when you work in artistic fields and stuff. And I'm really tired of like being underpaid and treated like shit for doing it.
Or paid late. But then they give you compliments. Yeah. So you think that that's going to make it all better.
Mm-hmm.
No, I worked at a place in Milwaukee that they would forget that a week was paycheck week or something like that.
No.
And then they would like the next week we would get the paycheck, but it was the paycheck that I should have gotten last week. So then like the whole like month would be fucked up and I was pissed off about it. And I was the day that I was going to go in and be like, this is bullshit. It was a teaching job at Sally's music school or something. And I went into my studio and on my piano was a Starbucks gift card for $10.
Thank you for the Starbucks gift card. However, my internet and like electricity have been turned off. Mm-hmm. If you could possibly yes. swipe it to get it on again.
Also, a Starbucks gift in Milwaukee. In Milwaukee, when there's like a billion great coffee houses to go to instead. Come
yeah, I
on.
Know.
This
yeah.
is basically what I'm saying. Go, here you go. Go fuck yourself.
Try harder.
Yeah.
But we were just talking about that at CVAC. They were talking about the fact that last year at this time in the actors community, there was a bunch of stuff that was going on where producers, directors were either sexually harassing or emotionally abusing their actors and
it's so co-workers. Common.
It's yeah. very common. Yeah. And so it blew up. It became very public. And so all the actors studio formed Not in My House. Well, CVAC said that they're founding something like that for opera companies.
Cool.
And it now has become a thing where if you aren't a part of Not in My House, whenever they post anything for auditions, they say, okay, here's the pay very clearly up front. Here's the pay schedule. Here's the rehearsal schedule. Here's our standards. If there's nudity in the show, it's listed. If you have any expectations. I like how I'm listing things. I just keep going up my arm.
Yeah.
This is podcast. You can't see this, but podcast I ran out goal. Of fingers. So I just started going up my arm to list things. And if you're not part of In My House and you don't post it, it now makes you look shady and it makes people question you.
That's so good.
It is like public shaming that makes everybody come on the same level. Mm. So for opera companies, we're going to start to do that. And I raised my hand and I went, okay, so what do you do? I would like to have a meeting about this because I would like to know what are my rights as a non-equity singer when I say they're making me do something that I don't want to do or they haven't paid me on time. Mm-hmm. What are my rights?
Yeah. Well, that's really interesting to me because I've had this conversation with Matt kind of like around the same time that CVAC was forming. And of course, I was just an errant thought while we were grocery shopping or something. And I was just like, man, you know what would be really cool for all of these people that are doing non-equity opera performing things is if we could like get together and just make like a what we expect out of companies kind of a thing.
Yes.
Like maybe a payment minimum or like a, I don't know. Like, and it quickly became like figuring out what that would actually look like would be so intensive and not worth anybody's time.
They're
doing
it. They're going to do it. And they're like, specifically, they wanted to talk about things like when you pay the $20 fee to go in and you know damn sure that pianist is not getting that 20 bucks. We wanted to sit down with some of the companies and be like, where does that money actually go?
Right. Yeah.
Like, especially for local regional theaters.
Right.
You know, that kind of, so I had this idea a couple weeks back and it'd be the most impossible thing to pull off, but it's very much along those lines. Because I think, and you in the classical music world, not in the classical music world, don't know about this, but I think there should be a regulatory body for vocal competitions.
Yes, same
because
thing.
Because that is where singers, especially young people who don't know what they're doing, get screwed out of so much money.
Yeah.
And, well, they're talking about it on the New Forum. people are posting, they're like,
constantly reading about this.
What is going on with this competition?
And I think that if there is a body that regulates, you can't, you know, your fees to be like an official competition can't be more this much money. You have to be giving this kind of a prize. People end up paying $100 to get $100 prize, maybe, you know,
yeah.
Like,
yeah.
And have a performance that they have to pay for. It's ridiculous.
Here's what pisses me off about emotional manipulation. It's failed performers that are taking advantage of people that are just trying to make it work right.
Oh, that's
now.
Unforgivable.
And that to me is my main problem. And it's, and like, that's been my experience.
Artists taking advantage of other artists to me is fucking unforgivable.
And it's, and it's like, just because you didn't have the performing career that you wanted to have does not give you a right to overcharge or treat the workers that you have like shit or whatever. Like, it's not fair. And I come at this from like the digital media perspective, where it's like, if you're your main audience and your main as a person that provides headshots or recordings or something, your main audience are working class singers that barely make an income. If you're charging some ridiculous overhead, that is like unfair to me, because yes, it takes a level of talent to do what you're doing, but like charging more than, I don't know, I'm not going to sit here and get into numbers of what people that are doing this kind of stuff should be charging, but you know, like you know when someone's looking for audition recordings and you're charging them $200 to do it, that you've done something wrong. And I think that that's where I get into this, like, that's kind of reprehensible.
Yeah.
Because it's not fair. And there is, like, it's something that people don't think about either.
No.
Well, and especially because it is a service that is necessary. It's
exactly.
The audition recording is what gets you in the door.
To audition, to pay more money to audition.
Yeah.
And it's just like, you know.
I got a whole, and I'm just going to totally like have a moment here. I got a whole problem with this because I haven't slept and I had a glass of wine at lunch. So that's cool.
Good for you.
I know. My mom was in town. It was cool. That's what we do. I got a problem with this whole audition recording to get an audition bullshit. If you can't look at my resume and see that I've got work experience, and if my recommendations that I'm sending in, my 3 recommendations...
Which is bullshit.
If you're not even contacting them to get a recommendation, what the fuck am I sending you a recommendation for, right?
Mm-hmm.
But if you can't look at my headshot, my website, listen to any... listening to clips is one thing, to get an idea of my voice type.
Yeah.
That's one thing. But if I'm making a recording, and I'm putting forth the effort to do that, and I'm paying $350 to get it edited, you know you're not listening past 30 seconds of that. So you trying to give me work based on that, or just saying, yeah, I guess we'll listen to you, is bullshit.
That's what's infuriating to me, is that you send in this incredibly high quality, like well-edited, beautifully composed video, and then you still have to come in and audition.
And well, I think here's my thought on a compromise to that. I think it's one thing to have people send in audition recordings, right? And I think that that's like a potentially fine thing, but you then cannot have that person pay for an audition.
Yes.
That is reprehensible. And then to the other end, as a person who makes a significant amount of income doing audition recordings, I still get people asking me to do audition recordings. Cool. It does not cost me $350 worth of work to do an hour or two of arias. And if someone's charging that much, I'm saying this publicly, if someone is charging you that much for audition recordings, it takes me an hour to take the recording of someone, and it takes me about half of the time to actually edit it. And if anyone's actually good at it, they're not going to need that much money. And, you know, like, I personally charge $50 an hour, including the editing. And I also know that that's very low, but that's also because, like, I am, like, a bleeding heart, and, like, I can't, like...
And also you charge that low with the hope that people will feel comfortable being like, okay, so I spent $50 on this recording, and you know, I feel like I've grown in the past couple months, and so now I can come back and get another
recording.
That's
a reality. Yeah. We constantly have to make new recordings.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And it's fucking predatory to like make recordings and for $200-$300 for someone, and then doing that again, because it's just like,
well, my point is, like, if you are a large opera house who sees a lot of artists and you've been doing this for a long freaking time, you should be able to look at my resume and the roles on my resume and get a hold of my recommendations and get an idea of who I am as an artist mm-hmm. and what it is that I do. And base whether or not you want to hear me on that, not on 30 seconds of some song that I'm sending to you that I know you're breezing through while you're eating lunch.
Right.
Well, sorry.
No, sorry, I was just going to say that I think that the companies are to blame also.
It's laziness.
It's laziness, but also I think that if the company, if it really just is a pre-screening as it is and they're going to listen to 10 seconds of it as they do, they shouldn't have such stringent requirements.
Thank you.
That's what I was going to say.
You're like, well, company A needs a Mozart in Italian, but not a Mozart in Italian, and they want a Rossini, but company B wants no Rossini, but they really want Menotti, and company C, and you, at the end of the day, to apply, first of all, you have all these application fees, but you need the 20 arias recorded, and that's impossible when you're just applying to get an audition anyway. They should all just say, send us something in Italian, we don't care.
Why don't they ask us to write a letter in which we describe ourselves as an artist? Here is me. This is what my voice is good at. This is what I'm interested in. Why isn't that part of the process too?
You're really overestimating a lot of these.
How much they give a shit?
How much they actually care about art to begin with? Because that's my problem with a lot of companies. At the end.
Bye. No, I remember.
They care about art at all. I feel like they've lost that in the business aspect.
When I was 23 and I was doing and I went like full throttle into the young artist program scene. Oh, yeah. I remember I made my list of all of the programs I wanted to apply for. I had my list of all of the requirements that they had, and you're right. I ended up needing to record like 10 different songs. And it was and some of them were obscure that I had to like learn at the last minute because I was like, I don't have an 18th century Italian art song. Like, why the hell do you need
it? Why do you need that when your season is doing Salome?
Right. Yeah, exactly. And so, like, you know, here I am, you know, in my early 20s singing Caro Mio Ben when I'm trying to just, like, put food on my plate. Sorry, donate to our podcast so I don't deafen myself with our shitty audio.
Came back and she jumped.
Yeah, I don't know what just happened.
Me neither.
If anybody just lost hearing because of that, let me know. But it looked like it wouldn't have.
Okay.
Don't sue us. We don't have any money.
Sorry. Yeah.
Oh my god! I don't know. That scared the living hell out of me.
I feel like particularly with the young artist scene, something that people don't talk about is until like the 1990s, early 2000s, the young artist scene was not as big as it was. Mm-mm. Like it exploded in the late 80s, early 90s, right? And then by the time you hit the late 90s, early 2000s, it got to be like the only way to get a career. Mm-hmm. But up till that point, they were not open auditions that were advertised. Mm-hmm. It was nepotism. Yeah. It was, hey, it was. No, for real. Nobody talks about this. It was, I like you and I'm on the faculty and you're on the faculty at that place and I'm on the faculty at this place. So you send me your singers and I'll send you my singers and that'll be cool. And that's why people went to go study at certain music schools. Not just because the teachers were fabulous, but from the bounce and the connections, right? Yeah.
And that still happens.
It still happens that people want to go because so-and-so's on the faculty.
Well, and I know that that happens, like, I know that Ohio Light is like a lot of Eastman.
I've never gotten an audition with Ohio Light Opera. I lived an hour away from that damn town.
I've gotten 2 auditions with them. I've gotten waitlisted once, and my teacher, when I told my teacher that I got waitlisted, and she was like, "I am so impressed by that because you have no connection to Eastman." Like,
and what, then we just have a moment. What the fuck are the kids in New York City and Eastman and everywhere else coming down to frickin' Ohio for the summer?
Yeah.
It's because it's not a pay to sing. So everyone wants to do it because you could actually spend the summer. I think they might even pay you.
That's the thing, though, is going back to it. So it exploded, right? The scene exploded and it got huge and it got really big and it didn't have time to catch up to it. So now you've got 50 million singers applying for 4 positions with everything. And now I think it is. I'm never going to get a young artist program based on this podcast alone and everything I've been saying. But I'm like, I think it's an entitlement thing. I think it's a bunch of old, angry people who didn't have the career that they wanted sitting around, and now they feel empowered and entitled that thousands of people are trying to apply. It is a self-worth thing for them. So half the time, I think it's an overinflated ego. We would like something the royal 20th century, we, but not Britain. Talking. No, yeah. Britain for us, no. Even though the entire season's Britain, we don't hear
it. Yeah.
Oh, we're going to hear enough Britain over the summer, so I'd rather not spend my spring listening to it.
We're doing all Britain, so we'd like some Schubert art songs, but only ones he wrote between these 5 years.
And not anything that has to do with animals. We're sick of the trout.
I was going to say, I was just going to bring up the fucking trout.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, well, we have about... Oh, my God, Moody on your lap right now.
We were going to talk about activism and it turned into talking about the circle jerk. That
well,
is
no, thank you. Because
part of the emotional manipulation.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I want to talk about slacktivism,
yes,
which was kind of one of our other talking points for today. We've got about 10 minutes left.
Okay.
I know that I'm going to preface it because for me, it's always the... No, you go ahead.
Okay, well, so you know, I'm sure most of you know the term slacktivism, but if you don't, it's like lazy armchair activism. You're sitting down and you're like, well, I can just reblog that and I've done something today.
Yeah.
And there is a virtue to it because sometimes it does help. Or maybe something like the ice bike challenge even. Like, that's kind of slacktivism because you're not necessarily raising any money or doing anything.
Yeah, but who actually donated to that?
I don't know. So
Donald Trump.
Did he really?
Yeah, he did the ice bucket challenge.
It doesn't mean he donated. It just means he did the ice bucket challenge.
Oh, no, if you did the ice bucket, then you didn't have to pay.
Yeah.
If you didn't do it, then you had to donate. Yeah. Anyway, go on. I interrupted
you. No, that's okay. So ultimately, I know people who actually run nonprofits and charities have said, hey, actually, no, it's not bad because it does get awareness out, and awareness is very important. But it's slacktivism has then steadily become worse and worse to the point where now I'm just seeing this things on Facebook that say that will give you some statistic that's usually not even right and says copy paste don't share.
Yeah.
And so that all these people who are intelligent even are doing that. I'm like, this is doing no good. This is like, bare minimum effort. This like, is no effort.
Like no citation.
No citation.
Nothing.
And it's you, really and you usually journalism. Do a little Google search and find out it's wrong. First of all, but also if this is something that you care enough about to put on your Facebook, spend 5 seconds and think about it and add an original thought. Copy paste and add a thought. I'll just do that even. That's the bare minimum, okay?
Or even find the source.
If you're too lazy to, if you really want to do something and make a difference and you've gotten on Google and in 2 seconds you couldn't Google and find your senator to actually write an email and you go to write an email on your phone in your hand and you're like, oh, this is too hard. Well, use ResistBot.
Yeah.
ResistBot is amazing. You text to like 50409 and you just send a text to it and it'll pop up automatically and say, hello, I am ResistBot. What's your name? What's your zip code? And it will automatically say, okay, text whatever you want. You formulate it in a text and it will formulate faxes and emails to your senators and representatives and say, is this great? Yes, send. There you go. And every other day, it'll remind you, hey, this vote is coming up. Would you like to text? Yes, I'd like to text. What would you like to say? Here you go. Send it on the phone. It does everything for you.
Fucking shout out to ResistBot.
How do you do that?
You text to like 50409. You don't even have to download anything.
What's the first text you have to make? So I'm do it for people at home.
And it's free.
Yeah. So what do you do? So
you text. Open up the phone and you text.
All right. This is a phone. How does it work?
That was a weird laugh.
And then what do you say in the
bottom? It's been a long weekend, okay.
You just formulate a text. You text 50409, I think was what it was. I can get my phone and double check that if I was wrong.
And just say like, hey?
And just text it.
50409.
And send something to it and say hello or something.
What about like, hey, winky face, eggplant emoji?
You can try it.
Yeah, I'd do that, please, actually. So we have two people doing it on their phones.
I don't want to do eggplant emoji.
Don't do that. I'm looking.
50409. Yeah, text
50409.
All right. So Daniel is. So choose an emoji. Perfect.
Resist.
Text
the word resist.
Okay. So
and it'll automatically.
He sent hey, and then he also sent the nerd emoji, but then he sent resist.
Yeah.
So, and it'll pop up and go, hey, emoji. I am ResistBot.
Hey, we got it.
Great.
It's amazing.
My servers are on fire right now.
Yeah.
So many of you are writing to Congress. It's awesome, but I can't quite keep up.
So what it does is it links it to their fax machine and their email, and it crashed. Like, Tammy Duckworth's office crashed the fax machine. It just spits them out constantly every time somebody sends it. And I mean, like, you know, everybody loves Tammy. I loved him. By everybody, I mean me and my dog loved him.
Well, you were talking about one of our Illinois representatives at
the okay, show last night. Yeah, last night I kind of shit on Dick Durbin a little bit. And
that name just sounds like a bad guy from Dick
Tracy. So Senator Durbin, I mean, he mostly does vote like kind of all right, right? But yeah. He's not the best. And he... What I was railing on him last night was when the DeVos hearings were up, he was like, I don't know how I'm going to vote. Oh, gee. I still don't know. And we were like, this is the least qualified person ever to be tried to put on any cabinet ever. And you're like pulling this, I don't know. You're a Democrat. Get your shit together. Meanwhile, Tammy Duckworth was like, I'm going to vote no because I have a heart.
Yeah.
Well, I was talking about,
and you have to watch. I mean, especially these fucking old white men senators. Even it doesn't matter what party they are, you have to watch them. Keep them accountable.
It's not even that. It's not even like, oh, I have a heart, I'm voting there.
Yeah.
I didn't put you in office to follow your heart, honey. No, that's not your damn job. No. Your job is to vote the way your constituents say. So if you don't know which way you're going to vote, I guarantee you I can tell you how you're going to vote, or your ass is not going to be in office in 2 years. I'm going to ensure it.
That's what I was telling everyone while
this
is up. You
want to keep your job? Like, let me tell you how you're going to vote.
I mean, I still kind of think we should get rid of him, quite frankly. But
I think we should do a massive sweep of the Senate and the House.
I think
that's something that I said on a couple podcasts ago is that the left needs to clean fucking house.
Yep.
We need to do it too.
Because if the Republicans can fall in line, so can we.
Yep.
Yes.
Like we, you know, if we are not going to vote from a humanitarian perspective, then we have the wrong people in office. Mm-hmm. If there are Democratic senators and congressmen who are not sure whether or not they're going to protect our public education system, mm-hmm. they no longer represent the people.
Yeah, I think the narrative that the left is trying to say now for that is if your representative is not pro-health and is not pro-education, they need to get the fuck out.
Well, and like, it's just because if you have any questions, ask your constituents.
Right.
What would you like me to do? My job is to represent you. That is my job. That is why I am in office. Mm-hmm. If I didn't want to do that, I'd go be the mayor of Whoville, you know, like.
And if you refuse to go to your town halls, you should be voted out.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Oh my God.
I didn't really want to go to the town hall. It's dirty and there are common people there.
Who didn't go to the town hall?
Plenty of people.
Oh, a lot of the representatives will not go to town halls because they're afraid of getting yelled at over.
Because they're
the Trump
not
care.
Listening to their constituents.
If Leslie Knope can go to a town hall meeting, fucking you can. Fucking Ron Johnson from Wisconsin can. By the way, Ron Johnson can go
back himself.
Jump in the fucking ocean.
Oh, we're just like, going back to the whole slacktivism thing.
That'd be a far way to go.
I find it really disturbing that people care enough to post something on Facebook but not enough to actually do something in real life.
Well, and like this coming from a person who just organized a protest cabaret.
Oh, well, don't get me wrong. Was a shit ton of work.
No, I know. No, but that's what I'm
that
saying.
That was a
like,
lot of work.
No,
and
but
it was tiring.
I mean, but that's what I'm saying is like, you know, there's slacktivism and then there's actually making a difference. Because mm-hmm. you said that you ended up raising like
over $1,000.
Over $1,000 last night. And it was fun and it was informative and it was incredible. And like... What I'm saying is if you're not sure what to do, then support people who do know what to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, get out there, go and support people like Emma. Go out and support people like Lee Wichman with CACTA.
Mm-hmm.
You know, go out and support the musical activists
of Chicago.
And like, get out there. And if you're not able to organize, then be willing to be organized. Like,
Yes.
There's so many things going on right now. There's so many events that they are almost overlapping. I feel like there's no excuse. Like, mm-hmm. if you care enough to put this on your Facebook wall and piss off the 3 or 4 angry aunts who are always drunk at Thanksgiving,
then go to a bar.
Go to a bar.
Right.
We literally, last night, we it was like a date. We just, like, had a little date and went and supported Refugee One and the ACLU.
Yep.
It was phenomenal. We had so much fun, and I bid on an auction item, and now I'm gonna get a massage. And And you know, Daniel and I spent way too much on drinks, and I got a silent auction item, and we paid at the door, and combined, we donated like $150 to.
You can probably write that off on your taxes as a donation, by the way.
Oh, I love that.
Anything you donate, goes as a tax donation is because it's going directly to ACLU and Refugee One. They're both 501c nonprofits. You can write off your bar debt.
Nice.
At least I think you can. I'm sure someone out there is going to be like, actually, yeah. Emma.
Teddy CPA is listening.
I haven't even started my taxes yet, so what do I know?
I'd be down to have someone that really knows what they're talking about with taxes on the show. If there is anyone listening right now. Yeah?
Pam.
Yeah.
Tori. Cool. She's phenomenal when it comes to taxes.
What I want to do, so I also want to talk to like a development person, and I know who I want to talk to actually. I was in an Irish youth choir with the development director for the Milwaukee Repertory Theater.
Cool.
And,
awesome.
And I want to talk to her about raising money for our nonprofit.
Cool.
And just for anyone out there, you know, just for like the information for anyone out there who's like, I have this idea and I don't know how I can monetize it. Mm-hmm. Like, let's have someone out there who it monetizes ideas Monday through Friday, 9 to 5.
Cool.
I just feel like if I can find, you know, $3,500 to do a pay to sing, I can find $100 to donate to a cause that I think is going to be important.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
But I don't have $3,500. And neither do Maureen and Daniel. So if you would like to Slappy Radio... You should.
Yeah, cool. So let's, I have to totally wrap up because I have to go to work. But thank you all so much for listening. I've been Daniel Johansson.
I continue to be Maureen Smith.
And I remain as a fixed point in time, Joshua Lewis Smith.
I don't even know who I am at this point. I'm so tired.
Emily Cox. Emily Cox. So if you love what we're talking about and want to get more Scoppy Mag, there are many ways to do that. You can head over to scoppymag.com. You can see articles there that we've written. We've had other people write. Hopefully there will be new ones soon. A really cool project that we started, Scoppy Studio.
I'm so excited about this.
Is a really cool thing that we just did our first one. Facebook is terrible. They have horrible algorithms that don't let anything be shown. So if you go onto our Facebook page, please do. It's Scoppy Magazine. You can see a video there. It should be the first post there. It will be the second after this episode is posted. Of Maureen's cousin, Brendan Nwankwo. He was the last episode. Please go and like the video. Share it.
Isn't that cool?
It was really cool.
Please do that. You can go on YouTube and you can, if you can view it on there, just like put it up on your browser and just like randomly hit refresh every 10 seconds so that it gets a bunch of views. That would be really great because we want Scoppy Studio to be a platform for Chicago local artists that is actually viable. And you know, that we can say to like composers in the local area, like, hey, do you want a place to premiere new works or something like that? And it actually means something and not just be like, come into my apartment with my cats and sing at them or like perform at them.
That's really cool too.
Yeah.
Moody will judge you.
Well, hey, if
he gives
that
great feedback.
Moody's a really harsh critic.
If that alone is a lure for some guitarist, composer or something that could do it in our apartment, please come on on.
Yeah.
We'll set it up for free recording of your work, of your art.
And plus publicity.
Yep. You can find us on Instagram at Twitter, at Scoppy Mag. Again, Facebook, Scoppy Magazine.
And as always, I'm here to emphasize the importance of donations. I scared the shit out of myself earlier with our audio system. It yelled directly into my ears. We would love to upgrade. So if you head to scoppymag.com and go to any page on our website, you can become a monthly subscriber. We have expanded our donation levels, so it's not just $5, $25, $100, because we thought that we should offer more variety. So we are at $5 a month, $10 a month, $25 a month, $40 a month, $100 a month, and $100 a year. That will be billed yearly. Head to our page. You know, poke around, check us out, give a little bit of money. We're working on some really cool incentives to become a monthly subscriber. That's going to be lined up with Scoppy Studio. There's also going to be some food related incentives because we like eating and so do you. So give a little, give a lot. And if you can't give, then listen, participate, and share.
Great. Thank you so much for listening. Go out and make something.
Yep.